Named after the mechanism that separates the sweet wort from the spent grain, False Bottom Girls helps you filter through the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer.
Hey, I'm Rachel Hudson, head brewer and co-owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, master cicerone, home brewer, and sensory expert. False Bottom Girls is proudly sponsored by Jasper Yeast, yeasts that are out of this world. Learn more about Jasper Yeast at jasperyeast.com. All right, welcome everyone to this episode of False Bottom Girls. I am Jen.
I am Rachel.
And today, you know, we may actually get around to talking about thiols. So we started tea last time, and then Rachel graciously allowed me, and our listeners graciously, hopefully, listened to the episode about my Aroma Explore the Wheel project. And we didn't actually ever get to thiols. So nope. That's actually kind of good news for me, because when we got ready to record again, I was like, well, I have thiols still ready to go. So.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes. So we can talk about that. Like, I love when we get ready to do, when we're talking about a podcast episode or like what our topics might be. And it's like, I already have something ready to go. I don't have to prepare something separate. This is wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you ever miss my beer class as a pilot, it's fine because I just use that to do an episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, pretty much I was thinking about like other episode topics that I might have coming up, and they are all probably going to be from presentations that I'm already doing, yeah, which is good not? Too, because not everybody can attend every presentation. And maybe, you know, you're interested in learning about mouthfeel and you can't come to Atlanta, but really you should come to Atlanta to learn about mouthfeel for me, because it's going to be a banger. So Crafted for Action is going to be June 18th through June 21st in Atlanta. And we're hopefully we'll be able to talk some more about that with its creator, Jen Price, in a future episode. But it's my very favorite conference of the year. And it's the one where, like, I have participated in it every year as a presenter. And it is, Crafted for Action is where I do my best stuff. Like, the stuff I'm most excited about to present at conferences and stuff, I save it for Crafted for Action. And so if you want to see me doing my very best stuff, you need to be at Crafted for Action. This year, you'll have to be there in person because I'm doing an in-person course, but there is an online component. And with the online component, they've moved to a pay-as-you-can model, mm-hmm. which, you know, we've talked about on the show. I really like that to be able to, you know, I can pay $50 for the online. So somebody else that covers, you know, at least one other person being able to do that.
Sure.
So there is an online component to it as well. But the in-person stuff, I won't just completely like fan out about Crafted for Action, but seeing it grow from the very beginning, this year is its fifth year, seeing it grow from the beginning to like how much it's grown and like how much it continues to grow and how much excitement is building within the industry about it. And like now people are traveling to Atlanta for this conference.
Yeah.
It's just such a cool thing.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that has nothing to do with what we're talking about today.
No, but if you would like to derail from thiols and talk about Crafted for Action, just kidding. Yes.
Craftedforaction.com. You can go there and learn more about it. And False Bottom Girls are a sponsor this year for False Bottom Girls. We're sponsoring ourselves. False Bottom Girls is a sponsor this year for Crafted for Action.
That's right. Proudly so.
Yes, we were very excited to be able to donate this year and help out, because it truly is grassroots. It started with one woman with a good support network, and now I think she's brought on like two more partners, but it's still such a community effort, which I know conferences are, but Crafted for Action is very close to my heart. I think it's the best conference happening in the industry.
What are you presenting on?
Mouthfeel.
Nice.
So listen to this. It's such a good presentation. Title for Atlanta is called "The Mouth's Got Something to Say." Famously, Andre 3000 saying the South's got something to say when Outkast won best rap album of the year. So I was like, I knew I wanted to talk about mouthfeel, and I was like, okay, like I need a good title. And then it's like when you get that title, I'm just like, oh
You should make a
yes.
rap. I'll help you.
Okay, great. Rachel is good with the rap lyrics.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe
Yeah.
Andre 3000 will show up. He'll be like,
Maybe. Maybe we can
hey,
collaborate on a rap.
yes, you and Andre 3000. Definitely equal footing in terms
Yeah,
of
well, I mean, I'll take his lead,
yeah. Okay, I'll let him know because
Thank
everyone
you.
in Atlanta knows Andre 3000. That's a
Good.
little known fact. So, thiols.
Thiols.
We're talking about thiols. We are doing it. I'm doing it right now. Here we go. So,
Yes.
thiols, we did have an episode with Dr. Laura Burns from Omega Yeast a few, oh my
Oh,
gosh, it may have almost been a year ago
yeah, I
now,
don't know. God,
but
how
it
old am
was,
I? So old.
yeah, such a good episode. And she's very, very good at describing things to lay people, and that's particularly with people who, like, once you get a PhD and all this stuff, like you're also just around other PhDs all the time. The ability to communicate to people who, aren't doing like yeast genetic engineering every day, being able to communicate what you're doing to people in a way that's like very understandable is a very rare talent, and she is excellent at it. So I definitely recommend, if you haven't listened to our episode with Dr. Laura Burns, that you go listen to that one. But there I'll be covering a little bit of what she covered, but we're just going to do a little bit more of a deep dive today. And as I mentioned last time, if you were in one of my first, or if you were in the first Aroma Explore the Wheel webinar, we talked about this, but not that many of you signed up. So I know not that many of you heard it. So when we're talking about thiols, we're going to start with hops because thiols are going to come from hops. They will also come from malt, but we'll start with hops. So I'm going to imagine that a lot of people are familiar with like that cross section of what a hop looks like on the inside. If you're not, you can look that up and see a diagram and you'll be able to see what I'm talking about because we're talking about hops, but we're talking about lupulin glands specifically. So lupulin glands are where you see like the kind of gold sticky sort of powder, like that's, when you're rubbing hops together, that's what you'll see. Or if you open up a hop cone, you'll be able to see the lupulin glands. And those glands contain hard and soft resins. They also contain hot oils and they contain polyphenols. Jeez, they
I
contain
get it, man.
polyphenols.
I was having a hard time speaking earlier as well.
So our resins, the hard and soft resins, are going to contribute to bitterness. And what we're really interested in hops and lupulin glands, and again, I'm going to say one thing I find interesting about thiols is if you've had a thiolized beer, how strong those tropical flavors can be. And the amount of thiols that are actually in hops are so teeny tiny that it just blows my mind that you can get there. Like, we're that sensitive to these thiols that you've got hop. Then you go into the lupulin glands, and then you go into the hop oils, and the hop oils can account for anywhere from 0.5% to 3% in some varieties of hops. But those hop oils are so small. And it, so when we're talking about thiols and like how potent they can be, remember that we're talking about like less than 1% of less than 0.5% of that is going to come from hop oil. And so they're so powerful. And as humans, we're very sensitive to thiols. So with our hop essential oils, like I mentioned, 0.5% up to 3% in some varieties, a lot of them are going to, those hop oils are going to be below our sensory threshold. So our individual perceptions of being able to smell these, they're going to be below. But this is going to be like this, what is it? The sum is greater than the parts. What is that saying? I don't remember.
I don't know.
Anyway, so They might all be below our perception level, but when you get them all together, they synergistically create these distinct aromas. So with our hop essential oils, there's going to be three kinds. The first is going to be hydrocarbons. Those are going to make up 40 to 80%. And those are going to be things like your myrcene, farnesene, humulene. Those are going to be your hydrocarbons. Then those hydrocarbons can become oxygenated, at which point they're known as oxygenated hydrocarbons. And that's going to be about 30% of those hop oils. So these are going to be less volatile than our hydrocarbons. So hydrocarbons are extremely volatile. That's why, like, you can smell a fresh hop and get a lot of that myrcene, like that really fresh green smell. Like, for me, I always pick it up as tomato vine, but the chances of that surviving the boil are very, very slim. So that's not going to end up in the finished product because they're so volatile. So an oxygenated hydrocarbon is a little bit less volatile and is also more soluble than a hydrocarbon. And that's going to include like our terpene alcohols, so linalool, geraniol. Those are going to be oxygenated hydrocarbons. And then we have sulfur-containing hydrocarbons. Sulfur-containing hydrocarbons are what we're going to be talking about today. Those are less than 1% of the total hop oil. So remembering again, our hop oils make up 0.5% of the hop, and sulfur containing hydrocarbons, these are going to be our thiols, we're talking about less than 1%. So they are so potent, and I will continue to just geek out about that because it's crazy to me, but they have very low flavor thresholds. So with thiols, it's newer technology, right? It's not like the brand new technology, but it's still like pretty new.
Sure.
Kind of fad, right? That the brewers are doing right now. And it's the like thiols, the research into that does represent like a pretty big departure from what we thought we knew about hops and malt, which again, you know, that goes back to like the all of the brewing research, except for the past maybe 20, 30 years, has been very big industrial brewers who need to produce an extremely large amount of consistent product every day that's fairly neutrally flavored. So, you know, there's not like Anheuser-Busch isn't going to pay for a lot of research into thiols because they don't care. Yeah. That's not their product. So the research into thiols now is happening more at like the yeast company level, you know, like at a private level.
Which is funny because it's a hop derived.
Right. Yes, exactly. And well, I guess I can kind of see, like, if I were a hop manufacturer, I'd be like, can you please stop telling people how they can use less of our product by using your product? But our three kind of important thiols in brewing, and I say important, not like as a necessity, but they're the ones that everybody kind of cares about right now. Mm-hmm. And who knows, in another 2 years, there might be a completely different set of thiols that people are like, oh no, now, you know, now the customer preference is this. But the three ones that are going to be important in brewing are going to be 4-MMP, which is that black currant, passion fruit, cat urine. If you're Dr. Bill Simpson, it's tomcat urine. Which I read that now in my head every time. I'm like, yes, cat urine. You also have...
I never caught that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're Scottish, right? So... But then we also have 3SH, which may also be 3MH, and that's going to give us grapefruit and passion fruit. Then we have 3MHA, which is going to be passion fruit, guava, gooseberry. So, you know, you've obviously passion fruit is going to be common throughout all three of those. And thiols can originate in one of two forms. They can be free thiols or they can be bound thiols. So free state thiols, like you would imagine, are released immediately when they are introduced via either late hopping or dry hopping. So those can happen by dry hopping or late hopping. If you are adding these thiol aromatics before the whirlpool, then they're likely going to volatilize off. So that's why we wait and add them until after the boil. And also until after, what is it, like 185 degrees Fahrenheit. Once your wort has dropped below the isomerization temperature, you want to be adding, if you're going for thiols. And so for the purposes of this discussion, we're assuming that we are looking to like maximize thiol release, right?
It's a very common New England IPA brewing thing to do as well, getting that wort temperature down,
Right, because you're not
which is
looking for the
hard,
bitterness. Yeah.
actually.
Yeah, no, it definitely
FYI.
is. So with our three state files, that just means that they're just available, right? We can, they're just there for us to use. We don't have to do anything extra. Bound files need to be released via an enzyme called beta lyase. And our bound files can further be broken down into glutathione bound or cysteine bound. So we have files branches off into free and bound, and then bound further branches off into glutathione and cysteine bound. So beta lyase is the enzyme that we need to free those bound files, and it's encoded by the IRC7 gene. And it does, we do get a little like alphabet soup with this discussion, but it is important to remember that IRC7 gene and that that's going to create the beta lyase that we need to free those bound thiols. So beta lyase is commonly found in wine yeast, and I remember learning about this and like how to thiolize these compounds because in Scott Janisch's book, The New IPA, he talks about here are things you can do for, you know, for biotransformation, you know, here like, and at the time, and this book is maybe 6 years old at this point. It's already outdated because at the time he said, you know, you'll need to buy wine yeast, or you can buy like this is called like Rapidzyme or something, which was like a wine product because beer didn't even have any kind of like thiolizing products. But now we do. We'll get to that in just a second. But some strains of brewer's yeast may have the gene necessary. They may have that IRC7 gene, but is disabled due to genetic mutations. And that, you know, again, that makes sense. Like a lot of most of beer for most of our kind of modern time has been, you know, very pale in color, very consistent, very neutral tasting. So we've selected for yeast that do that. We haven't been selecting for yeast, beer yeast that have that IRC7 gene. If there are strains that do have a functional IRC7 gene, the gene won't create the enzyme in the wort that we need. So it won't create that beta lyase because the wort has too high of a nitrogen level. So even if you had a brewer's yeast that would do that, it still wouldn't work in our wort because of the nitrogen. So if most brewer's yeast strains don't have the gene that we need to create the enzyme to free our bound thiols, how do you extract them? And so our response to that is you're going to use thiol boosting products. The first thiol boosting product we'll talk about is Phantasm. And, you know, I don't brew full time, and I'm not like that active of a home brewer. So Phantasm was one of those things that like I hear people like, oh, like this has Phantasm, or hey, has anybody used Phantasm? And I've just been vaguely aware of it, and I know that it does something, right? So
Just makes me think of orgasm. Every time you say it, I just stop myself from laughing when you first said
So with Phantasm, thank you. Now that's in my
it.
head. But it was, you know, it's just one of those products that like I was very like just vaguely aware of. So I learned a lot about thiols by putting together this information about thiols, which is a fantastic way for people to learn concepts. Anyway, we currently have two ways that we can boost thiols in beer. That's going to be Phantasm and thiolyzed yeast. So Phantasm was created by Garage Project in New Zealand, and it's a patented thiol precursor powder. So it's extracted from the Sauvignon Blanc grape skins from the Marlborough region of New Zealand. And the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc grape skins have a higher thiol concentration than either hops or malt. So this powder, it contains our precursors that convert the 3MH and 3MHA to those passion fruit, guava, gooseberry, tropical fruit flavors we're looking for. And they recommend that it's you add it during the whirlpool, which makes sense. It needs to be present during active fermentation, so you can convert those thiol precursors to the tropical flavors. And one thing that is important that like Garage Project really emphasizes is that Phantasm is there to add to your hop aroma. It's not there to replace it. So you shouldn't treat, you know, you shouldn't treat Phantasm as a hop replacement, which to me also makes a lot of sense, because if you were trying to use it to replace it, then you're not getting as many thiols from your hops. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's supposed to be additive, not a replacement. So that's going to be Phantasm. The next one we'll talk about is thiolized yeast, and thiolized yeast is going to be our second way to boost thiols in beer. And this is probably one of the corniest jokes I've ever made, but I still think it's hilarious. But Omega Yeast owns the copyright to the word thiolized. So their yeast is thiolized yeast. Other yeast companies, you'll see them call it like thiol releasing, you know, things like that, but they can't use thiolized. So you could say that Omega's thiolized yeast is the steam beer of the yeast world, and all the other yeast companies are just California Commons. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to add that to my type five on very specific beer puns or beer jokes that if you get it, you get it. And you probably still think I'm a giant dork. That's fine. That's fine.
It's okay, like Kleenex and tissues.
Right.
Everyone calls it Kleenex, but it's just a brand. And you're genius. How, whatever they did to do that, let's take this word that sounds super weird, Kleenex. And we're going to get everyone to just replace it with the word tissue.
Thiolized.
I love it.
But just know, when I'm using thiolized yeast, I'm talking about all thiol releasing yeast strains. So a thiolized yeast is going to enhance the yeast's ability to biotransform the compounds found in malt and hops to free state thiols via biotransformation. So there are a couple of levers that brewers can use to manipulate their thiol aroma. The first is going to be the first will be using hops with high amounts of bound thiols. And there is information out there now. I don't think it's probably as comprehensive as a lot of the other information, but you can find information out there now about the thiols, free and bound thiol levels of different hop varieties. So if you're looking to release a lot of unbound thiols, you can use hops that have a lot of bound thiols, or you can also experiment with different base malts. And obviously, as a malt girly, this makes me very happy, because it also, I think, encourages people to look into like craft malt and, you know, things like that to be able to get different varieties. So barley contains a lot of bound 3SH, and lower kilned malt seems to have higher levels. And when I first read this, you know, I was kind of like, huh, I wonder why that is. And then the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me, because thiols are in that sulfur-containing hydrocarbon group, and they fall into the same category of sulfur-based compounds like DMS, right? So DMS is prevalent in highly kilned malts because its precursor is very heat sensitive. So the longer malt is kilned, the more SMM is driven away. So to me, like, once I started to think about it, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense, that if you have a lighter kilned malt, it's going to have not just more DMS precursors, is going to have all of, like, not all, but it's going to have more thiol precursors in it, just because they haven't been driven away by the heat. That is my educated guess on why lower kilned malts, but I think that makes sense, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you. So when we're talking about biotransformation, there are two different categories. The first is the conversion of aroma compounds. And then the second is going to be the release of bound aroma compounds from precursor form. So obviously today we're talking about thiolized yeast falls into that second category, because we're using it specifically to release bound form thiols. So like I mentioned, beta lyase is the enzyme responsible for converting bound thiols to free thiols. And there are two types of thiolized yeast available for brewers to use. The first one is going to be yeast with beta lyase because their IRC7 gene is activated. The second is going to be yeast with beta lyase from the inclusion of PAT-B. And PAT-B is a bacterial beta lyase that is derived from bacteria. We have these two different ones because a limitation on yeast that rely on IRC 7. And so a lot of like Escarpment, I want to say maybe White Labs, a lot of their thiolized yeast or thiol boosting yeast is going to be that IRC 7 gene. But IRC 7 can only work on cysteine bound thiols. So you'll recall we have cysteine bound thiols and glutathione bound thiols. So cysteine bound thiols only account for about 10% of the bound thiols. The rest are going to be the glutathione bound thiols. So we're not going to get the IRC7 gene is only going to work on those cysteine bound thiols, right? Just the smaller amount. They're not going to do anything for the glutathione bound thiols. So those are going to stay. You're not going to be able to free those with just the IRC7 gene. And, or I'm sorry, that that are thiolizing via the IRC7 gene. But we all know how excited I am about the low flavor thresholds of these polyfunctional thiols. Something like 4-MMP has very, very low sensitivity. And when we're talking about very, very low sensitivity, most of our aroma compounds that we talk about, that we study, are reported in parts per million, meaning that it takes so many parts per million for us to be able to detect them. And the thiols are like parts per trillion in terms of whether we can pick them up or not. So it's like if you put a thiol, a drop of thiol in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, like if you put 4-MMP in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, you would still be able to detect that 4-MMP, right? So
yeah,
it's
crazy.
Very, very, very low thresholds. And again, I'm going to say it again, hop oils, 0.5% sulfur-containing hydrocarbons are going to be less than 1% of that 0.5%. And then like these bound thiols, the cysteine bound thiols, are going to be 10% of that.
So that what? Yeah.
And if you've had, and I keep saying that because if you have had a beer with thiolized products in it, it is like a huge tropical fruit bomb. Like there, I have not had a subtle thiolized beer. And so just those, the flavor is just so, like so saturated in there. And it's just from these little bitty guys, just little tiny guys. So these compounds are highly aromatic. So yeast that thiolyze via bacterial PAT-B is more active than IRC7 alone, and it can free glutathione bound thiols directly without needing to convert them to cysteine bound thiols first. So a glutathione bound thiol is going to make up about 90% of bound thiols. So the thiol output from yeast with that PAT-B added to it is much more intense. So the way we can use these products is one. So this was another thing, like I would hear people say like, oh yeah, like I'm using, when I'm using thiolized yeast, I'm mash hopping. And I was just like, okay, words, words, words. And didn't really think about like why that would be. And with mash hopping, so if you're using something like thiolized yeast, then you want to do mash hopping. And we've talked about mash hopping. We kind of think we figured out maybe in the GOSA episode why German brewers were using mash hopping. But when you're using mash hopping in combination with using thiolized yeast, it's going to increase the amount of those 3-MH thiol precursors. So malt has really high levels of glutathione bound 3SH, and mashing is going to help convert some of those glutathione bound 3SH molecules to cysteine bound 3SH. So if you have cysteine bound 3SH as, cysteine bound 3SH, so that's going to be your bound thiol, that's going to be about 10% of your total thiols. The cysteine bound thiols, both IRC7 and PAT-B strains can convert those cysteine bound precursors to 3SH. So that's going to increase our perceived aromas of passion fruit, grapefruit, and mash enzymes, particularly those that are acid, that are active in the acid and protein temperature rest ranges, are going to be where you're going to be able to convert the most amount of glutathione bound precursors to cysteine bound precursors. So I think this is here I go again. It's just a really cool thing. You know, like I really love when you can like synthesize all of these ideas together. And like I said, like diving into thiols so that I could better explain it to people, I was like, oh, this thiols are so cool. Like now I get why people are excited about it. Because before I was just like, oh, it's like hazy bros are excited about thiols. I probably don't care about them then. And I do. They're so cool. So,
and they're in malt too.
Yes, exactly. And so the last thing I'll say about thiolyzed yeast, I've mentioned, you know, a couple of times, like the IRC7 gene yeast or genes that use PAT-B, some yeast companies, so like Omega Yeast is one of these companies, Lalamond is another one, they use CRISPR technology to genetically modify their yeast strains. And
that's cool. That's,
yeah, but it's not like, it's not a judgment call at all on my point, on my part, but you know, there are people out there who are a little wary of genetically modified organisms, GMOs.
Sure.
So other yeast companies will use techniques like yeast hybridization to create their strains. And one of the reasons why they'll do this is because genetically modified products are illegal in some countries, particularly in Europe. So Germany, France, the UK, India, Russia, like those are, that's a pretty big population, right? Mm-hmm. Where you wouldn't be able to use that PAT-B genetically modified yeast because it is genetically modified. So like Omega wouldn't be able to sell that in, you know, in a lot of Europe. So again, not a value statement, just something to keep in mind that like, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, if PAT-B can do all this, can do all this stuff, then why would anybody use the other yeast strain? And it's because the PAT-B might be illegal in your country and you may not be able to get it.
Good point.
Yeah, thank you. Just quickly, and I don't have these broken down into like bound and free thiols, but again, you can find this information online. Hops that are high in thiols, Citra, Cascade. So Citra and Cascade are both in, have high levels of 4-MMP, 3-SH, 3-MHA. So if you're looking to thiolize, you know, or maximize the amount that you're thiolizing your products, something like Citra and Cascade both have high levels of all three of those thiols. And that's also a good thing if, you know, something like Cascade is going to be a much cheaper hop than something like Galaxy or, you know, a New Zealand hop. So you can use a cheaper hop like Cascade in conjunction with these thiol boosting products and still get that really big, like passion fruit, tropical fruit aroma. So I will walk you through, this was helpful for me to be able to kind of synthesize what we can do with thiol boosting products. And let's say that we want to build a beer recipe that's going to maximize biotransformation. And for purposes of this discussion, we're just going to focus on that second category of biotransformation, right? Using something to convert into something else rather than just, you know, relying on the yeast to be able to convert the precursors found in hops just like straight, you know, straight to aromas. So if we're looking to increase or maximize the amount of thiols in our beer, you know, walking through the process of brewing, how would you do that? And the first thing we would do is, well, the very first thing we would do is select our hops, right? Because we want to select hops that are high in either free or bound thiols. But we're, you know, we're looking for hops that have those high levels of thiols in them. And so we'll choose our hops. And then the next thing we're going to do is going to be mash hopping, right? Because we want to get those malt precursors out, because specifically malt has those high levels of glutathione bound 3SH, which can be converted to cysteine bound 3SH during the mash. So the enzymes that are active in the acid and protein temperature rest ranges are going to be the ones that are going to convert those glutathione bound precursors to cysteine bound precursors, which then can be freed by thiolyzed yeast with that IRC7 gene. So if you're using something that's not genetically modified, like you're not using the PAT-B, so you need to convert as much of those glutathione bound thiols to cysteine bound thiols, you know, to be able to really maximize using that IRC7 gene yeast. So for our acid rest, okay, actually, Rachel, what is our temperature range for an acid rest?
About 113 to 122? Well, about 122.
Close. What is our temperature range for a protein rest?
122.
No, you were very close. So acid rest is going to be 93 to 113 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. Remember,
Protein
ferulic
rest.
acids, like 113.
Yes. Yeah. Our protein rest is going to be 113 to 138. So
Yeah.
if
So,
we're
yeah.
right
So
around that,
122 sounds good.
yeah. So, but if we're, yeah, if we're right around that like 113
Yeah.
temperature rest, then that's where we're going to be able to convert those glutathione bound precursors, right? So we're not just doing mash hopping, we're also kind of doing a step mash, and we're doing that specifically to be able to get these thiols. And like you mentioned, you do the same thing when you're making a Hefeweizen or any beer that has the Weizen strain, and you want to extract a lot of that ferulic acid during the acid rest, so you get a lot of that four-vinyl guaiacol flavor, that clove flavor later on. So this is going to be similar to that. And then let's say that we're just going to boop, 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 boop. We're in the boil, we've added our bittering hops, now we're ready to knock out. So we've knocked out, we're going to start a whirlpool. We're going to add two things to the whirlpool. The first is going to be phantasm, right? Because phantasm needs to be present during active fermentation. And we're also going to add our first dry hop. It's not really dry hop, it's going to be our whirlpool hop, right? Because dry hopping during early fermentation is going to result in better extraction of thiol precursors. Since we're also going to use thiolyzed yeast, we'll finish knocking out into the fermenter and add our thiol boosting yeast according to whatever the manufacturer's instructions are. So we've got our active fermentation hop addition, and that's going to be extracting our thiol precursors from our hops because we've already extracted a lot of our thiol precursors from the malt, or we have extracted what we're going to get from our malt during the mash. So we're going to add a second hop addition during active fermentation, so then we can extract more of our terpenes for conversion to aromatic volatiles. We didn't discuss terpenes today, but that's going to be in that other category of biotransformation. And if we're going to be using something like exogenous enzymes for our terpenes, we'll add that at the same time. And then we're going to add our third dry hop addition. And we're going to add that when fermentation is complete. That's just kind of your classic dry hop, right? You're getting that for the aroma of the hops. So, we've decided we have, we're, these are all the ways we've maximized using those thiol boosting products. So we've made ourselves a triple dry hopped beer that has maximized using all of the thiol boosting products that we have at our disposal. And that was, again, that's just kind of a hypothetical that for me, I was like, okay, I need to like kind of build a recipe to walk myself through, okay, this is when you would do this, and in your mash, you would want this rest. So then by the end, you've got this really like punchy tropical fruit, in a lot of cases, overwhelming
Yeah.
thiol aroma and flavor in your beer. So yeah, that's a little bit about,
Nice.
I guess a lot of it about thiols,
Yeah.
but it's, like I said, it's very new technology. I mean, to be clear, thiols have been in hops
Oh
and
yeah.
malt. We didn't like
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
we didn't add those. They've always been there, but now we have the research and the science to understand what is happening, and then we have products now to help us with that.
Yeah.
And I do think that's really cool. Even if I'm not a fan of thiolyzed beers that much, like I that
I'm
is,
not a super fan
yeah, it,
either.
but it's a very cool process.
Yeah.
And it's again, like you could make, and especially for professional brewers, Rachel, I know you can attest to this, like you don't want to add your super expensive hops to the boil, or
No.
you don't want to have to add like seven different kinds of super expensive hops if you can use Cascade and thiol boosting products and get the same result for less money.
Yeah, for sure.
And I would be interested in doing like, and I know people have done side by sides, but I would be interested in doing a, here's like, we're looking for this finished flavor profile. Here's a beer that was just like Centennial and Cascade, but it used thiols. And then here's a beer that used, you know, Galaxy and like all these other hops in it, no thiol boosting products, and just see.
Yeah.
Like, is it a big difference, or is it? Yeah, just what I would be super interested in being able to taste that and see what the differences are. Because part of me is like, is it kind of like if you make a beer with extract, you know, instead of like all malt, where like it tastes okay, but you can kind of tell. It's not.
Yeah.
Or like use a cake mix, or you made it from scratch. Like they're both good, but you can tell the difference. I don't know. So listen, friends out there, if you want to do that and
Report back.
I don't know. I guess save some for me. Like, don't show up at my house with him. That would be weird. But yeah, I think that would be a super cool thing to try. Maybe I'll do that on a homebrew scale, except that I just don't like thiolized things.
I think you have to drink it.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I have to drink it. So yeah, there we go. We made it. We made it through thiols. We only got a little bit distracted.
Yeah.
And we stayed.
Congratulations to us.
Stayed on topic. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, listen. 9 a.m. on a Monday. That's pretty rare for us to stay on topic.
Yeah. And that's our new normal for recording too. So
yeah.
Work with us.
Yeah. So when we start the episode and say we're talking about something, don't get too excited about it, because there's a
you
likelihood.
Never know.
Yeah. There's a likelihood that suddenly we'll be like, let's talk about grain storage or something. We found fun about that. Yeah.
They're like, didn't sign up for that.
Yeah. It's like, okay. So yes, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Jen.
Yes. And you can find us on social media at False Bottom Girls. You can email us falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. And you can, what else can you do? Oh, you can go to our website. FalseBottomGirls.com.
You show up at Jen's door.
Yeah.
Send snail mail.
Yeah.
Send beer. Probably, if you show up, you should definitely bring beer.
But if you show up, you should know that I treat my front door the same way I treat my phone. I do not answer it. Somebody knocks on the door and I'm just like,
yeah.
You can hear the giant dogs.
I agree.
Also, I have like three different no soliciting, please don't knock on my door signs that people have to pass to actually get to my door.
So rude, and they still knock.
Yeah, sometimes they do. Not often. Usually they'll see the first sign and stop. And if they make it down the driveway, then they'll hear my two 200-pound dogs barking.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, boop, back up the driveway. So yes, thank you, everyone. I don't have another
have a good
ending. I mean, yeah, look, I really...
No pun Monday.
Yeah.
No pun Monday.
No pun day.
No pun day. There you go.
This has been False Bottom Girls,
and we make the brewing world go round. False Bottom Girls is proudly sponsored by Jasper Yeast, yeasts that are out of this world. Learn more about Jasper Yeast at jasperyeast.com.